So nice, they had to do it twice. Not one, but two grand slams from Arthur Ashe Stadium in New York. Tonight may not have been live, but according to the people who were there, friends of mine who were at the show, they said the crowd was. Unfortunately, it didn't really come across that way on TV. Not for a lot of the show, anyway. It had its moments as far as the crowd reaction is concerned, but it sounded like these people were very tired. Having sat through, I think, Elevation, 2 hours of Dynamite, then you get 2 hours of Rampage. I had a bunch of people telling me it didn't sound that way in the building, but it was a different vibe than the vibe that we got watching Dynamite on Wednesday. But on the whole, another very enjoyable show. Up and down the card, if you take the two cards from Wednesday and Friday, if you combine them, if this was one big pay-per-view, this would be, I think, a candidate for pay-per-view of the year. I think AEW put on a great night of action for the people who were in attendance that night. Arthur Ashe, all the people who worked there, supposedly very happy with AEW, looking forward to having them back. If it were up to them, they would have AEW back a lot sooner than they're planning on coming back. AEW is looking at this supposedly as being maybe an annual thing they do. Arthur Ashe, though, the people there, they would love to have them back a lot sooner. So they seem very happy with how things went. The fans seem very happy with how things went. But this is your Rampage Grand Slam review. I am the Solemn Monster, and thank you for choosing me for your Rampage coverage here tonight. A very late night. It is after midnight here on the East Coast. I really hope, and this is just my personal preference here, I really hope that this whole Rampage two-hour thing does not become the norm. Feels like they're testing the waters for that. In fact, TNT seems very happy with Rampage, so much so that we found out this week Rampage is not moving to TBS with Dynamite, which was the original plan. Dynamite is moving to TBS on January 5th. Now we know the exact date. Rampage is staying right where it is. TNT is said to be thrilled with the numbers that Rampage has been putting up, even though the numbers have trended downward a little bit. Apparently, it is still a lot more than what TNT was doing in that spot. It's a death spot. You know, 10 p.m. on a Friday night is a death spot. And they are elated that they have a show that is actually performing well in that spot. So happy with the show are they that I could see them expanding it to 2 hours on a permanent basis. I really don't think the show needs to be 2 hours every week. You got to remember, this, what we had here tonight, what we had this week, all the Grand Slam stuff, this was like a pay-per-view being given away for free. Not every show is going to be like this. Rampage every week is not going to look like the card that we had tonight. And shout out to H-Dub. I see you, who just became a Sound Off superstar. First channel member of Saturday here at 12:15 a.m. Thank you, H-Dub. But again, not every week is going to have a loaded card like we had tonight. So these late night streams will hopefully not become a normal occurrence. Hit that thumbs up. Super chats are open. I will be reading your messages here on the air. And I want to say thank you to not just H-Dub, but all of our new channel members. We had a bunch of people sign up this week. Just in time to check out that hour-long Q&A video that I did earlier in the week, which is available to all members of our Sound Off family here on YouTube, and I welcome all of you. So let's get into it here because it is late. Some of you are probably dozing off. Don't doze yet. Go make some hot cocoa or whatever it is that your preference is. Maybe some of you like to drink some warm milk. Got some milk and cookies, whatever it may be, whatever your preference may be. Grab an alcoholic beverage. Grab one for me. I don't have one with me. I have water. Have a shot for me. Excalibur, Taz, and Ricky Starks, they were on commentary. I never thought I would be so happy to see a three-man announce booth in my life. They didn't have the fourth man tonight. It was fine. Which just proves my point. You don't need four people on commentary. I thought these three were fine. Ricky Starks is actually pretty quiet when he's on commentary. He's not as he's not quite as charismatic as he is during his promos. He was very low key. But I thought as an announced trio, they were fine. No need for a fourth man. Show opened with CM Punk One-on-one against powerhouse Will Hobbs. This was CM Punk's first television match in over 7 years. They even put the date on the screen, January 20th, 2014. That had to be about a week or so before the Royal Rumble. That would have been the last time CM Punk was on free television wrestling in the ring. And so he comes out back in trunks after donning the long tights for his match with Darby Allin, or as Taz would say, Dobby. He wrestled Dobby in his long pants at All Out, so the trunks were back. Right away, Punk was kicking away at Hobbs' quads, and he flipped off Hook, who was out there in the corner of Will Hobbs. And Punk looks over at Hook, and he flips him off. CM Punk apparently has a death wish, because that's just something you don't do. Hook got up on the apron for the distraction. Punk ran over. Hook dropped down to the floor. And when Punk turned around, Hobbs wiped him out with a standing crossbody. And down went CM Punk. So Punk took a turnbuckle hard in the corner, chest first, a la his hero, Bret the Hitman Hart. King Solomon. I wonder if we're related here. King Solomon just became a channel member. Welcome. Well, Dobby, is that how it should be? Am I pronouncing it wrong? King Solomon, thank you for becoming a channel member. Dobby. I like Dobby. Sounds like Dobby when he says it. Love Taz. So Hobbs had Punk draped over the middle rope in position, the 619 position. And Hobbs comes off the ropes, right across Punk's head, lands on his feet outside the ring. And we headed into our first picture-in-picture, our first of many picture-in-picture breaks here during this show. Back from break, Hobbs had him up in a bear hug. Punk fights out of it, and he gets Hobbs down. And Punk goes up to the top rope, and he's setting up for the Randy Savage elbow. I don't remember if he did that in the match with Dobby. I don't think he did. And he even mouthed the words. He said, it's been a while. So this probably was the first time in 7 years we've seen him do that. He hits the big elbow drop off the top, only got a near fall out of it. Punk gets the big man up on his shoulders. He's going to go for the go to sleep. But on the way down, Hobbs catches his leg. He turns it into a spine buster. I thought that was a very nice counter. Very smooth. He hit the spine buster. Punk, however, he counters into a sleeper hold about a minute later. And he starts putting Hobbs out. Hobbs is going nighty-night. And Hobbs dumps him on the back of his neck with a back suplex. Hobbs picks him up, hits a stampede for a near fall. And then he decides to sit on the top rope. So Will Hobbs, he perches himself up on the top rope. I have no idea what he was going for. We never got the chance to find out. Punk cut him off. And Punk goes up top. And I knew what was coming. Because we've seen him do this as well. We've seen him go up top, hit the top rope Rana. He did this with John Cena in the Money in the Bank match they had back in 2011. Punk follows him up. He goes for a Rana. And Hobbs holds on to him, and he powers him up, and he's getting ready to powerbomb him. Well, technically, he's standing on the middle rope, but he's going to powerbomb him from the ropes, and Punk ends up turning it into a Rana anyway, and this did not look good at all. And I had a friend who was in the building who said there's a spot in the Punk match that they might edit out on television. Well, they didn't edit it out. They left it in. And I could see why, because it would have been weird to just cut this whole part of it out. But it got botched on the way down. It got botched. Hobbs landed on his head. I shrieked. Thankfully, he seemed to be okay. He didn't break his neck. He wasn't loopy the way he was in that match with Dante Martin a few weeks ago. When Dante Martin, he got his bell rung. Hobbs got his bell rung. He looked concussed in that match. He was completely out of it for the rest of the match. That's not what this was, but it looked nasty. It was a scary moment there for a while. Dustin Cox, C-O-X, get your mind out of the gutter. He just became a channel member. Welcome, Dustin, to the channel. They did a spot where Hobbs accidentally ran into Hook, who had jumped up on the apron again, and Hobbs stumbled backwards into the GTS. Punk nailed it, and he got the pin. I think to the surprise of no one. Did anybody actually expect Will Hobbs to beat CM Punk? Of course not. That's not what this match was for. Will Hobbs went into this match. You could tell he is someone who they are taking their time building. He's got something. He has that presence about him. You know, he's a bigger guy. He's got the power moves down. Beautiful spine buster that he's, you know, incorporated into his matches. And there are a lot of people who think he's going places. Even Big E. You know, when he had tweeted after Big E won the WWE Championship on Raw last week, Big E tweeted him back and basically gave him his props and put him over and said he was going to be a big star. He had high hopes for him. A lot of people do. And so when this match was over, even though he had lost, and I didn't think it was a great match, and there were people disagreeing with me on Twitter. The thing is, the word great gets, I feel like it gets abused a lot. We see that word get thrown around far too often. For matches that aren't necessarily great, they could be very good. It all depends on your own perspective. I didn't think it was great. I thought it was a good match. But it wasn't great. I just think that word gets thrown around a little too liberally for my taste. But it was a good match, a strong showing by Hobbs, biggest match of his career, by far, against CM Punk in a building with almost 20,000 people inside. I would say this is the biggest match of his career, and he delivered. I thought he looked good. I thought Punk gave him a lot in this match. And Punk, for his part, I thought looked good. He busted out a few moves we didn't see the first time against Darby we haven't seen in years. Outside of that botched Rana spot, I thought everything else here was very good. And he gave Hobbs, again, a lot, made him look like $1 million. But we all know, let me also be honest here, we all know what the real dream match is. It's not CM Punk against Powerhouse Hobbs, it's CM Punk against Hook. This is the match the people are waiting for. Hook was trending on Twitter during this match. Punk wasn't trending. Hobbs wasn't trending. Hook was trending during this match. I'm telling you, people are ready for it. When this kid debuts in that ring, you talk about ratings. You talk about 1.4, 1.6, 1.8. If anybody can bring them to the promised land, it's Hook. I wasn't a believer. But I'm slowly hitching my wagon to the bandwagon here for Hook. That's the match. I'm a believer. We had the AEW debut. AEW debut of the Super Click. Adam Cole and the Young Bucks against Christian Cage, Jungle Boy, and Luchasaurus. I have to say, you know, when Jungle Boy came out, I love seeing all those hands waving for Tarzan Boy. They were going back and forth, singing along to Baltimore. I love to see it. I only wish I was in the crowd to sing along. There was also a sign in the crowd, if you didn't pick up on it, that said, "Hey, Braun, we're waiting." Well, you could keep waiting, because he ain't coming in. You're going to be waiting a while. Christian opened the match with Matt Jackson. And Jungle Boy tagged in not long after that. He took out both Bucks. And he motioned for Cole to come into the ring. They were really teasing this. Like, we're going to get a big confrontation here between Adam Cole and Jungle Boy. Adam Cole, in his promo on Dynamite a few weeks ago, even put him over and said, you know, there are some people who really annoy me. And he singled out Jungle Boy. So that is going to be his first, I don't even know if you can call it a program. I mean, they're building to a match. But they were really teasing it out here. And Cole didn't want to get in the ring with him. So Cole ended up dropping down to the floor. Jungle Boy chased around the ring after him. But he walked into double super kicks from the Bucks, who he had already dispatched. He had already taken care of Matt and Nick Jackson. They were on the floor. He didn't see them on the other side. When he came running around, boom! Stereo super kicks right to the face. Back inside, Cole had Jungle Boy in a chin lock. While the Bucks ran the ropes, they were showing off. They each gave Adam Cole a kiss, one on one cheek, the other Buck on the other. And they gave double super kicks to Jungle Boy as he was in the hold. So they go to break. Vitamin Vision in the chat says, "I said the same thing about Sting." What did I say about Sting? Remind me, I forgot already. What did I say about Sting? I said a lot of things about Sting. Back from break, Jungle Boy gets the hot tag to Luchasaurus, who goes for a double chokeslam on both Bucks, but Cole broke it up. Luchasaurus chokeslam Cole on top. I think it was Nick Jackson. He chokeslammed him on top of Nick. Cole and one of the Bucks hit a double super kick on Luchasaurus, and then we had this huge flurry. Jungle Boy took Matt down from the top rope with a Rana, and German suplexed him. And then Christian flew into camera view off the top rope with a flying headbutt for a near fall. Jungle Boy went for the snare trap. Doc Gallows showed up. Just what we needed. Doc Gallows gets up on the apron to distract him. That breaks up the attempt at the hold. This ended up breaking down into a chaotic mess here. Cole and Luchasaurus knocked each other out with pump kicks. The Bucks, Christian, and Jungle Boy, they all fought onto the ramp. Matt Jackson low-blowed Christian while he was setting up to deliver a kill switch to Nick. And then Matt threw Christian off the ramp to the floor. The Bucks then threw Jungle Boy out to the floor as well. Back in the ring, Cole hit this great-looking Panama Sunrise on Luchasaurus. He hit the move. Luchasaurus sold it great. Spiked him headfirst down into the mat. I really wish he would win his matches with it. It's just such a great fucking move. And it's just a setup move. It just annoys me. Because that could be a finish. But he hits it. And then what happens after that, both Bucks immediately follow up with the BTE trigger. Cole then lowers the boom for the win. It is no longer the last shot. That's the knee to the back of the head. He is calling it the boom, which frankly is a much better name. It goes with his theme music. And Adam Cole picks up the win for his team. After the match was over, Jungle Boy came in to tend to Luchasaurus. Adam Cole knelt down and was staring at him and talking shit. They were eyeing each other. They are going to have a match on Dynamite this Wednesday. It is now official. It will be Adam Cole one-on-one taking on Jungle Boy. I thought the match was a lot of fun. I understand that this kind of match is not for everybody. When you have all these different spots and there's just so much stuff going on, I'm kind of hit or miss on matches like this. Some of them I feel like do come off as just nothing more than a spot fest, and it turns me off. But this I thought was fun. The Super Click, we knew they weren't going to lose their first match together in however many years. My only gripe, honestly, was Luchasaurus being the one to eat the pin. He was super over in New York. And I would not have had him be the one to take the losing fall. I don't think it would have hurt Christian to be the one to lose. I would have had him eat the pin here in this match. But again, Luchasaurus was... I mean, Jungle Boy is always over, but Luchasaurus, he had a lot of fans in New York. And they were into everything that he did. When the match was over, the Bucks on Twitter posted a new bio. They changed their Twitter bio every few days. And their new Twitter bio now reads, "Give us the Trios titles." I think it's only a matter of time before we see Trios belts in the company. They are introducing a new championship very soon. It sounds like it's going to be a new women's championship. I don't know if it's another... I believe it is another singles title for the women. I don't believe it's women's tag team titles. So that's coming soon. But I still think at some point next year, they will introduce Trios titles, and if they do, and if the Super Click is still together at that point, it would seem very likely that they would hold on to them at some point down the road. But we don't have Trios belts yet. Chris Jericho and Jake Hager taking on Dan Lambert's Men of the Year, Scorpio Sky, and Ethan Page. Hager got the tag. He fell victim to a jawbreaker. Ethan Page got the tag. Page was immediately hip-tossed by Hager. And Hager followed up with a belly-to-belly suplex for a near fall. Jericho got the hot tag, and Page just kicked his head off. We went into the picture-in-picture. The heels were dominating Jericho at that point. We come back. Scorpio wore down Hager with a chin lock, hit a chop block to his knee. Hager came back with a clothesline. Jericho and Scorpio Sky both ended up tagging. Jericho hit a springboard drop kick to knock Ethan Page off the apron. And then he dropped Scorpio with a fist off the top rope. Jericho hit the lion salt for the near fall. Hager tagged in, hit a Hager bomb. Vader bomb. Let's call it what it is. It's a fucking Vader bomb. show some respect for a legend who should be in the Hall of Fame. Hager got the ankle lock on Sky. Jericho locked Page in the Walls of Jericho. So we had dueling submissions here. And this was kind of weird. Normally, Rampage is a one-hour show. But since it was 2 hours, you would think that, okay, well, they'll just continue into the second hour. As these submissions, these stereo submissions are being applied, Excalibur is freaking out. The copyright box is on the screen. They go, we're not going anywhere. Stay with us. And they briefly went dark and they came right back. So it's like, we have to end the show. Technically, that is the end of the show. We have to fade out. And then they immediately faded right back into the match. So that was the beginning of hour two. So as they come back, Lambert tripped up Jake Hager when he hit the ropes. He was going to hit the ropes to come off. Lambert tripped him up. As he tripped him, there was a very sloppy... The finish here was very sloppy. He kind of stumbled into a roll-up. Scorpio Sky pinned Jake Hager. This was the correct outcome here. It's why I picked the heels to win this match when I did my predictions. Lambert's boys needed a win. And they got one. This really was the first time, right, on TV that we've seen Lambert in their corner. And so unless they were going to blow the whole thing off, you've got to let them win. And they did. It's the correct outcome. Now, after the match was over, Jericho and Hager got their hands on Lambert, who was gloating outside. They dragged him into the ring. And before they had a chance to do anything to him, all of a sudden, all of the American Top Team MMA folks showed up. They all showed up. They walked down to the ring. They surrounded the ring. We had Andre Arlovsky, Junior Dos Santos, Paige Van Zandt, Jorge Masvidal. It was somebody else whose name I didn't write down. Masvidal was the main one, which you'll know why in a second. So they pounced on Jericho and Hager. Paige Van Zandt, who has done bare-knuckle fighting recently, not successfully, but she has done bare-knuckle fighting, starts throwing shots at Jericho's gut. And Masvidal hits a running knee that I thought looked great. He was in the corner. All the rest of them are picking Jericho up. In comes Masvidal, and he hits the running knee. Almost as good as Daniel Bryan. I thought the knee looked good. They left Jericho laying. He had blood on his forehead when they zoomed in on his face. I didn't think the match was anything special. I didn't really care for the match. But like I said, Lambert's crew needed to win. Certainly a lot more than Jericho needed the win. And I thought the Masvidal knee at the end was great, but I do not ever need to see Chris Jericho in the ring exchanging punches, worked punches with Junior Dos Santos. This looked awful. It looked completely ridiculous. So let us not ever see that again, please. Junior Dos Santos is not a wrestler. He's a fighter. But if you're not trained and you have to pull your punches... You know, he was taking it light on Jericho, which, of course, I don't expect him to go in there and punch his fucking lights out, but it looked terrible. So that was the one thing that did not look good. We had the AEW Tag Team Champions, the Lucha Brothers, and Santana and Ortiz wearing blue and orange. I don't know if you noticed this, blue and orange face paint for the New York Mets. Hell yeah. Citi Field right in the background of Arthur Ashe Stadium, although no game there tonight. I don't think so. I think they're on the road. But anyway, they're wearing the Mets colors on their face. Taking on Private Party, the Butcher and the Blade, representing the Hardy family office. Santana and Ortiz and Private Party, all House of Glory alums. House of Glory coming back November 12th in Queens. All the action is in Queens. You got the Mets playing in Queens, although there's not much action there of late, but you've got all the, you know, the Dynamite and Rampage show in Queens at Arthur Ashe Stadium. GCW had a show, I believe, in Queens tonight. House of Glory is going to top them all in November. I can't wait. Get to call all the action. But I was also thinking this. If the Inner Circle is still a thing, right? And technically it still is. It looks to me like there's not going to be a formal breakup of the Inner Circle, but they're all kind of off doing their own thing, right? That's kind of what it looks like. Seems like they're all off doing their own programs. Sammy with Fuego, right? So I get that, but still. It's like the NWO. When you're the Inner Circle, you're the Inner Circle for life. It's supposed to be this brotherhood. in the segment right before this, Jericho and Hager, they're being outnumbered by all of these MMA, these non-wrestling people. They're being beaten down and assaulted. And then in the very next segment, out comes Santana and Ortiz, who are their boys. They're all technically part of the inner circle. It is a little goofy that they were just in the back getting ready for their match, and their boys are out there getting killed, and they didn't come out to try to save them. I mean, I understand why, but kind of doing it back-to-back like that, I thought was a little silly. Seemed to me like if I saw two of my good friends out there getting their asses kicked, being outnumbered, you know, 8-1, I would at least go out there and make the attempt to save them. But apparently they didn't think it was important enough to do that. So they had a wild brawl here at the beginning of this match to start things out. It ended with all of the HFO members on the floor. All the baby faces hit crazy dives out over the top. It was a dive fest here in this match. A word of warning, by the way, to all the people. Love to do dives, which at this point is pretty much everybody in every promotion. Sami Callihan is going to be gone for a while. You're not going to be seeing Sami Callihan on Impact Television, if you watch Impact, until well into next year. And the reason why is he injured himself doing a tope suicida during the TV tapings last weekend. He didn't just hurt himself on a dive. From the description of the injuries, it sounds like these injuries were like what happened to Sid Vicious in WCW. Broken ankle, broken tibia, fibia. I mean, he really fucked himself up. Had surgery, he's going to be gone for a very long time, all on a dive. I haven't seen it because I don't think it's aired. It may never air. This was taped last weekend. But again, when you're doing dives nonstop in every single mat, you're just asking for trouble. And I understand a lot of the guys in this match are the guys that you would expect to be doing dives in their matches, but we just see them so often now that when you do that, you're just tempting fate. And unfortunately, Sami Callihan was the one who got bit. And he got hurt pretty badly, and he's going to be gone for a while. So that's unfortunate to hear. We had Penta and Ortiz. They hit a double-team splash on the blade for a near fall. Private Party hit Ortiz with a flipping DDT out on the floor. Matt Hardy was threatening to cut Ortiz's hair. He pulled out a pair of scissors and picked up his ponytail. He was threatening to cut it off. All of a sudden, we hear the music of Orange Cassidy, who got a big pop. Orange Cassidy got one of the biggest ovations of anybody on this entire show for a crowd that, at least on television, sounded very muted and very subdued. And again, I understand it may be different if you were there in the building, you might feel differently. But on television, that's how it came across. But when he came out, he got a big pop. Everybody loved Orange Cassidy when he came out. And he was doing a lot of press in New York, you know, in advance of the show this week. But he comes out. Slowly, of course. And Jack Evans sees him, because Jack Evans is out at ringside with Matt Hardy. And Jack Evans comes over onto the ramp to go after him, but Orange Cassidy hits the orange punch. It lays him out. And then he heads to the back. And that was the last thing we saw before they headed into commercial. We come back from break. Isaiah Cassidy hit a neckbreaker stunner combo on Santana. Penta got the tag, took out Cassidy, and then the Butcher came in, and he took out Penta. Phoenix hit Butcher with the hook kick, and then ate a pump kick from the blade. Mark Quinn went for the shooting star press on Santana, but Santana moved out of the way. And the Lucha Bros hit the Fear Factor. Santana and Ortiz followed that up with the Street Sweeper. And Santana got the win for his team here in New York. I'm sure that was a great feeling for him. I hate recapping matches like this because I don't want to take my eyes off any of the action because I'll miss about 6 or 7 things. Things are always moving. It's like so manic during these matches and things are always moving so fast. I feel like I'm going to just, you know, miss half the match. Just take my word. This was the usual insanity that you would expect from some of the people involved. And it's not going to be for everybody. But again, I thought the match they had here, it was a good match. But this was good stuff from these teams. And Santana and Ortiz, they may not have left Arthur Ashe Stadium with the tag team titles like I had pitched a few months ago. They could have built to it and had them be the ones to beat the Bucks here on this show. But then we wouldn't have had that great moment at All Out with Penta and Rey Fénix in that great cage match. And yeah, things worked out fine. But even though they didn't have their big moment here winning the championships, when they eventually do step into the ring with the champions, and they will, and then they're not partners, they step into the ring as opponents, they step into the ring as adversaries, it's going to be a match to look forward to between Santana and Ortiz and the Lucha Bros. Don't know that we have had that match before. If we did, it was probably back when Santana and Ortiz were healing it up in the Inner Circle, so if it has happened before, it'll be fraught. It'll feel like we're seeing it for the first time, but I am looking forward to eventually seeing that match. One good thing about the Inner Circle, I will say, doing their own thing, is that Santana and Ortiz are now allowed to break out on their own and not feel like background players, which for a lot of their time in the Inner Circle, they felt like background players, certainly in the tag team division. You know, they had their moments in the Stadium Stampede matches and everything like that. They had that great TV match against Best Friends, the Parking Lot Brawl. But they have not competed for the tag team championships and been front and center in that division. And now, if they are going to kind of do their own thing and not focus so much on the faction, now they'll finally have a time to shine and show what they can really do. And eventually we'll get the match. And I'm sure the match will kick fucking ass because both teams are great teams. Two of the best teams in the entire company. So in the back, Tony Schiavone was interviewing Matt Hardy, who challenged Orange Cassidy. He challenged him to a hair versus hair match, but not with him. He challenged him to a hair versus hair match against Jack Evans. And this was news to Jack Evans, who said, "Excuse me, come again. I beg your pardon." He did not seem very happy that he was now thrown, he was thrust into this hair match that he did not agree to. Boy, you know, if only there was someone, if only there was a podcaster who had suggested that this very scenario would play out only a few weeks ago. I mean, gee, I wonder who that could have been. That Jack Evans would be the substitute for the eventual hair versus hair match. Well, in any event, the match is official for Rampage next Friday. Get ready, everybody. Get ready for bald Jack Evans. Trying to imagine what he'll look like without hair. I look like a fucking egg or something. I can't really picture it. Sammy Guevara and Fuego del Sol came out on stage. They were doing Sammy's gimmick where he comes out with the cue cards with messages written on them. All of a sudden, Miro sneaks up from behind them and attacks. And they tried to fight him off, but Miro beeled Fuego, who weighs like 140 pounds. He beeled him off the stage down through two tables down below. So that took care of Fuego. And then Miro locked Guevara in the game over submission. This is all ahead of their TNT title match. They're going to be having a championship match this Wednesday in Rochester on Dynamite. I hope that they do not do the title change there. I have no issue with Sammy Guevara being the next TNT champion, but don't do it this week. Drag this out a little bit. These two are only getting started. Let Sammy work for it. Let him earn it. It'll be more fun that way. Full gear. But they're going to have their first match on TV this week. We got a video package with Andrade El Idolo. And they had the subtitles. Thank you, by the way, to the AEW production team for that. The subtitles make these promos a lot better than they would be without them. It would be a bit of a struggle. But he was explaining why he got rid of Chavo Guerrero. He didn't need his help to beat Pac in their match on Rampage a few weeks ago when Chavo went in and, you know, Andrade wasn't looking, the referee wasn't looking, and he hit Pac in the back of the head with a laptop. Andrade didn't like that very much. He said when he and Pac meet again, Pac this time will have no excuses when he gets beat. So they didn't announce when this would be taking place, but Pac and Andrade are going to have a rematch, and I'm totally okay with that. No complaints from me. We had Anna Jay one-on-one against Penelope Ford. as I welcome all of you. I have to show some love here to everybody joining here late night here on a Saturday morning after tonight's two-hour rampage. So thank you to everybody who is joining me so far. Again, I'm going to be reading all of your super chats a little bit later on. Thank you, by the way, whoever that was. I just missed. So we just had a new subscriber, but thank you to that person and all of our new channel members. We've had probably about three or four already so far tonight, which is awesome. Anna Jay and Penelope Ford. Anna didn't even give her a chance to get to the ring. She attacked her in the aisleway as Penelope was coming down. And Ford briefly got the advantage in the ring, but Anna Jay dumped her out to the floor, whipped her into the ring post, then into the barricade. Back in the ring, Anna went for the Queen Slayer sleeper, but out comes the bunny. And the bunny hops to the ring for the distraction, causes her to break the hold. So she releases the Queen Slayer. This gave Penelope the advantage heading into the break. Come back from break, and Anna Jay is going for the sleeper yet again. This time, Ford breaks it by backing her into the corner. At that point, the bunny hops up onto the apron to distract the referee, and while that's going on, she tossed a carrot, no, not a carrot, but brass knucks. She tossed the brass knucks to Penelope Ford. She hits Anna Jay with them, and she gets the pin. I groaned at that finish. Ew. That was my reaction. After the match, Ford and Bunny, they're continuing their assault on Anna Jay. Here comes her best friend. Here comes Ty Conti running down to the ring. She, too, though, fell victim to the brass knucks. And so she got knocked down. So all of a sudden, the Hardy family office comes out. Because these ladies are part of the Hardy family office, or at least the bunny is. Mr. LH just became a member. Welcome, LA. What does the LH stand for? I need to know these things. But the Hardy family office comes out, and they form a human shield with their backs turned to the ring, as if they're expecting somebody to come out and make the save. They're going to make sure that nobody can come to the ring and make the save. So they're all lined up like a wall, like a human shield, like I said. Well, out comes Orange Cassidy and Chris Statlander, and they walk out on the stage, and they're standing there, and they're waiting. I don't know what they're waiting for, but they're standing there. And now, all of a sudden, we hear the Dark Order's music, and out come the members of the Dark Order. So now they have the numbers advantage. They all rush down to the ring and they fight the heels off. Alex Reynolds is out there with Preston Vance. And they try to apologize to Evil Uno and Stu Grayson because, you know, the Dark Order has had a lot of infighting and a lot of issues in recent weeks and they want to kiss and make up. Evil Uno does not want to make up. He leaves the ring. And he looks like he's struggling with his decision and he decides, and he walks out. So the dysfunction in the Dark Order continues. You know, there was one point before this happened where Excalibur said, oh, Anna Jay, she's, caused the Dark Order to come back together because of her, right? They came out to come to her rescue, and I'm thinking to myself, brought the Dark Order back together. How can I ever miss you if you never fucking leave? They were never apart. Now they're back together? Apparently not. Evil Uno is not ready to get back together. And I've had people ask me, what do you do with the Dark Order? How does this end? Who's going to be the new leader of the Dark Order? Members of the Dark Order have said that they don't need a leader after Brody. That they don't want one or wouldn't feel right. I don't know that they're going to assign a new leader to the Dark Order. Yes, I do think that if Bray Wyatt were to ever come into AEW, he would certainly be a good candidate to lead the Dark Order and actually make them a darker faction. But I don't believe Bray Wyatt is coming into AEW. I could be wrong about that. I'm not as sure about that as I am that Braun Strowman is not coming into AEW. That I'm pretty sure of. Bray Wyatt, I've heard conflicting reports about whether or not he's eventually going to make his way there. But I have absolutely no idea if he does, if the intent is to have him have anything to do with the Dark Order. What I know is that they're in Rochester, New York for Dynamite this Wednesday. Rochester was the hometown of Brody Lee. I would be very surprised if they didn't do something or say something to honor him. That was going to be the show last year where he was going to make his debut on television, And that was the week that everything shut down and COVID effectively started here for all of us. And so he never got to make his appearance in Rochester. And then that show kept being delayed and delayed and delayed. So like Newark a few weeks ago, which was also delayed and delayed and delayed, and finally they came to Newark. And that was actually a really fun show when they were in Newark and a hot crowd. They're going to be in Rochester next week. Maybe whatever this next chapter of the Dark Order is going to be, maybe that's where they do it. Maybe they do it in Brody's hometown. I don't know. The problem is, in my case, I don't care enough about the Dark Order, frankly, to really necessarily even want them to stay together. I mean, do you care all that much about Colt Cabana and Preston Vance and some of these other people? I mean, could Evil Uno and Stu Grayson just go out on their own as a tag team? Because I think they probably could. But if they're going to keep these guys together, if they're going to go heel, you got to give me a reason to care about them. And one way to do that would be to inject some new blood into the group and assign somebody who can actually lead them and say, look, you guys, you're all on different pages here. Let's bring in somebody here to unite them and get them all back on the same page. Who that person would be, it would seem to me like probably somebody from the outside who we're not thinking of. That's why I thought of Bray, but I guess we'll see. But the fact that they're in Rochester this week, I'm just thinking whatever is going to happen might happen on that show. So then Justin Roberts announced that the main event was about to begin. And the main event was going to be OHBK C83 just became a new member. Welcome to HBK. The boy toy. Is now part of our Sound Off family here. He's a new channel member. But Justin Roberts announced the main event was about to begin. He said that it was going to be an unsanctioned lights out match. So I guess this doesn't count towards the rankings or win-loss records, right? Isn't that the way it usually works? This doesn't count towards your win-loss record. Yeah, that's why when Thunder Rosa beat Britt Baker, it didn't count. Because it was a lights out match. It was not sanctioned by AEW. And he said that AEW would not be responsible for what happens here in this match. John Moxley and Eddie Kingston taking on Lance Archer and Minoru Suzuki, who got the full Kaza Ninare treatment here on this show. And again, quiet on tonight's show, quieter than they were on Wednesday, but they sung that chorus when they hit that Kaza Ninare part. People in New York knew exactly what to say and what to do. Good on them. Unlike those people in Newark, I think it was a few weeks ago, 40% of the crowd didn't seem to know what the hell they were what the hell people were chanting and talking about. So I gotta say this also about Suzuki. It was not lost on me watching the show tonight. Once I realized that these four were going to be headlining the show, that you have Minoru Suzuki, who's 53 years old. He used to be in Pancrase, he was mixed martial arts guy and became a pro wrestler. He's been around for so many years, decades he's been around for. And here he is headlining in Queens on TNT. And at the same time, because this is a tape show, tonight he was in Queens again wrestling Homicide on the GCW show, which would explain why we saw Homicide on the show tonight. And I just thought, what a legend. This guy is everywhere. As he said in an interview he did this week, he's not a New Japan guy. He's a freelancer. He books his own stuff, so he can pretty much go wherever he wants. And he's been hanging around in this country the last few weeks, and he's been all over the place. He was wrestling Jonathan Gresham for GCW a couple weeks ago. He had the match on TV with Moxley. Now tonight at Arthur Ashe, wrestling Homicide. Guys everywhere. EJ in the chat earlier, before I went live tonight, and shout out to Rojo Bear. Rojo Bear 24 just became a channel member. I salute you, sir. Becoming a channel member here at 1 o'clock in the morning. You are awesome. But I want to address a question that EJ had before I went live tonight in the chat. He's asking, what happened to Jake Roberts? Where's he been? We haven't seen Jake the Snake on TV for several weeks now. Jake signed a new contract with AEW. And as soon as he signed that new contract with AEW, he disappeared. And the reason he disappeared is because he's been having some health issues. And he was spotted recently at a signing, I think it was. He was in a wheelchair. He had the tube up his nose with the oxygen tank next to him. Jake has COPD from years of smoking. And now he tells everybody in interviews, don't be an ass like me. If you smoke, quit. Nothing good is going to, which is true, nothing good is going to come out of smoking cigarettes. I mean, I have family members who had bad outcomes because of that, so I've always stayed away from that shit. But if anybody is in a position to give a PSA on why smoking is bad, it is Jake Roberts. And so what I'm thinking is that it has to do with his COPD, and I hope, you know, hopefully everything works out well. But it would not surprise me if it had something to do with that. So whether or not he's going to be back, I don't know. I would imagine when he's feeling better, he'll be back. But I have seen him do interviews, like podcast interviews in person, like in video on YouTube, where as he's doing the interview, the oxygen tank is sitting next to him and he has the tubes, you know, up his nose and everything, because sometimes he just can't breathe. Without it, he can't breathe. So when I would see him do these spots on AEW television where he would give somebody a short arm clothesline and take, or he would take a bump and fall down, I was very surprised, because this is after I saw him doing those interviews with the oxygen tank. And I said, boy, he's out there taking bumps. I hope he knows what he's doing. But obviously he's been having some issues recently. So hopefully everybody is rooting for Jake to feel better. At least he recognizes, you know, the what the issue is, and he knew enough to stop smoking. So good on him. Because when you're doing it for so many years like he was, I'm sure that's not an easy thing to do. Yes, Alberto says Jake was smoking crack. Big difference. I understand he was smoking crack, but he also smoked cigarettes. You could smoke both. Which is probably why he's having all these health issues now. It's not good. It's bad enough to smoke cigarettes. When you smoke cigarettes and crack, possibly at the same time, bad things are going to happen. But yes, I am aware. So they all started out on the floor. And Suzuki grabbed two chairs. He walked out onto the ramp and he goaded Moxley to grab one of the chairs so they could have a lightsaber battle on the ramp with the chairs. We saw them do this in their match in New Japan years ago. And they did it again here in this match. And they had a chair battle that Suzuki got the better of. Then in the ring, there was a chop battle between Suzuki and Eddie Kingston that Eddie got the better of. Eddie then went outside and pulled out a table from underneath the ring. He propped it up in the corner. But it backfired. And Suzuki gave him a hard boot to the chest. I mean, he kicked this guy right in the chest so hard, and he knocked Eddie Kingston backwards and he went right through the table. There was enough force behind the kick that he broke the table and crashed right through it in the corner. So then Lance Archer catches John Moxley, who's coming off the top rope trying to do some kind of move, maybe a double axe handle. He catches him, he goozles him, takes him down. Suzuki gives Moxley a PK. Archer went outside the ring and he beat up a bunch of workers who were planted there at ringside as what they called ringside attendants, the ring crew. He starts beating up various members of the ring crew out on the floor. And then Archer chokeslams Moxley out onto the pile. They all catch Moxley. They all fall down. Archer grabs a leather belt. And back inside, Suzuki puts Moxley in the sleeper for a few seconds. He then lets go, and he gives him to Archer. And Archer wraps the belt around Moxley's neck, and he hangs him out over the top rope as we head into the final ad break of the night. Come back from break. Moxley's hands now are duct taped behind his back. At least they didn't use handcuffs. It's bad enough we had more kendo sticks here. Another tired trope that we have in wrestling. And of course, Sunday is Extreme Rules, so it's going to be fucking Kendo Stick City. Although, from what as I play the card back in my head, I believe we only have one Extreme Rules match on this show. So it might actually only be limited to the main event, but I guarantee you we will see the appearance of multiple kendo sticks on Sunday night. And they appeared here in this match as well. But if you're going to tie the guy's hands behind his back, we also see handcuffs used a lot. Well, they didn't use handcuffs this time. So at least they tied his hands with something else. But they're whipping Moxley with the belt, and he's defenseless because his hands are tied behind him. Suzuki locks on a single leg crab with Moxley's hands tied behind his back, so that looked cool. Archer started whacking Mox with a trash can lid. Suzuki grabbed the kendo stick and started wailing away on Moxley's chest as he laid prone on the canvas. Eddie Kingston was trying to make it back into the ring, but Archer took him out. Moxley then, he's sitting up in the ring. And Moxley spits at Minoru Suzuki. I don't know what would possess you to do such a thing. I mean, that's almost as bad as flipping off Hook or putting your hands on Hook. That would be worse. But he spits in the direction of Minoru Suzuki, and that's just something you don't do. Suzuki punches him in the eye, and he starts biting his forehead. He's trying to eat John Moxley. We got chance of Eddie. People were ready for him to get back into this match. Eddie Kingston was almost a non-factor in this match, pretty much, up until this point. But I figured they were saving him for the fin. I mean, I figured he was going to be picking up the win here because it's Queens, you know, it's New York. It's New York. You got to give Eddie Kingston the win here. Hey, come on. You know, give Eddie Kingston the win in his hometown. So that's what they were building to. They wanted people to start chanting his name, and they did. And sure enough, back in comes the Mad King, and he comes in with machine gun chops to Lance Archer in the corner, hits an exploder, dumps him on his head. Suzuki, though, locks on the sleeper. And then Archer grabs Eddie, and he hits a helicopter slam. Not to be confused with Ric Flair's helicopter, well, you know. Suzuki then goes outside, and he grabs more chairs from underneath the ring, and he starts sliding chairs into the ring. And he positions them in the ring now. He's setting up furniture. And he positions two of the chairs back to back. And Lance Archer is in the corner and he's going to give, I think it was Kingston, a blackout onto the chairs to finish him off. When all of a sudden they hit somebody's music. And I didn't recognize who it was. But I see on the big screen it says, Homicide. And there were people in the building who reacted and knew who he was. It's New York, so of course they're going to know who Homicide is. These are wrestling fans in New York. At least 60% of the people in New York who are wrestling fans are going to know who Homicide is. I guarantee it. Or they perhaps know somebody. I mean, it's New York, so they probably know somebody who was the victim of a homicide. One or the other. But if you remember when I first pitched the idea of doing a tag team match on this show, the idea that I pitched was that John Moxley would recruit Homicide as his tag team partner. And the reason I did that is not just because Homicide is a New York guy, but because I knew Homicide was wrestling Suzuki tonight at the GCW show, that he was going to be in Queens wrestling Suzuki one-on-one. And so I figured, well, if Eddie Kingston would be off doing something else, like challenging Miro in a rematch for the TNT title, which they ended up not doing, then Moxley needs a partner. Why not Homicide? And they can even mention the fact on commentary. They're not shy about mentioning matches from other promotions. They can mention, oh, Homicide, he's going to be wrestling Suzuki here in New York later this week. And, you know, they ended up having Eddie Kingston be the partner. But sure enough, Homicide still ended up on the show. So I wasn't wrong. So there he was, and he comes out from the crowd with a chair, and he hits Suzuki in the gut. He hits Archer across the back. He frees Moxley's hands. Suzuki then takes out Homicide. He goes for the gotch pile driver to Moxley. But Moxley gets out of it. Two back fists by Eddie Kingston to Lance Archer, who's still fighting. He doesn't go down. He's still fighting. Moxley, though, hits him with the paradigm shift. Homicide passes a trash can into the ring to Eddie Kingston, who places Lance Archer in the can. So Lance Archer is laying on the mat. Half his body is inside this garbage can. Then Eddie Kingston starts hammering the trash can with kendo stick shots. Probably about 15 of them. Wailing away over and over and over again. And I know it makes a great sound acoustically, but just think about anytime anybody does this spot, I just shake my head. Like, you know, if I was in a fight, let alone a non-sanctioned one where there are no rules and I can fucking kill the guy if I want to, and I really want to beat this guy's ass and win this match, I can tell you what I'm not going to do. I'm not going to first be nice and place a garbage can over his head before I start hitting him with the stick. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to hit him in the fucking head with the stick. So anytime I see a spot like that, I mean, I understand all of wrestling is suspension of disbelief, but there are just certain spots where it's like, really? This is always one of those spots for me. And he won with it, too. He won. After he was done, he covered him and he pinned him and he won. Eddie Kingston won the match for his team. I enjoyed it for what it was. I knew it was just going to... This is exactly what I expected it to be. When they announced it as a lights out match, I figured it's just going to be this tornado match with lots of plunder and brawling and weapons and kendo sticks and chairs and tables and ladders and whatever. We didn't get a ladder. But it was exactly what I expected it to be, with Eddie Kingston getting the big win in his hometown. And I always enjoy a good Minoru Suzuki match. So when this was over, when this was over, I was happy. I was happy enough when this was over. Crowd sounded exhausted for a lot of what we saw in that second hour, and even some stuff in the first hour. Like I said, I knew some people who were in the building on Wednesday at the show, and they said it was a very long night because you had Dark Elevation, you had the 2 hours of Dynamite, you know, it went right into the 2 hours of Rampage. Show ended around midnight. It's a long show. And so you're going to have, and as somebody who has been to WrestleManias that have been even longer, you can have great matches that are coming up in the second half of WrestleMania, but when you're spent, you're spent. That's how it came across on TV. Apparently, they may not have had the crowd mic'd up well enough because it didn't translate on TV the way that apparently it was in the building, but not as strong as a lot of what we saw on Wednesday. Nothing was going to be able to compete with Kenny Omega against Bryan Danielson. I mean, that's one of the best TV matches that I've ever seen. I'm not going to say it was the best. I've seen a lot of really great wrestling television matches over the years. It's hard for me to sit here and say that's the best. I don't know that it was the best, but it was in the conversation. They had a fantastic 30-minute pro wrestling match on Wednesday. And nothing after that was going to top it. But when you take the card from Wednesday and you take the card from Friday and you slap them together, if you look at it as a pay-per-view, this is one of the best shows that AEW has ever produced in front of their biggest crowd ever. Almost 20,000 people. I know they announced 20,177 is the attendance. I trust WrestleTix on Twitter. They track all of this stuff. A lot of really good information. They say it was 19,000 and change. A lot of the suites that were being counted apparently were empty. So they didn't hit 20,000 legit, it doesn't sound like, but 19,000 in the building is still easily the biggest crowd they've ever had. And one of the biggest crowds in New York City in decades. Legitimately, in decades for a professional wrestling show. That includes WWE. So kudos to AEW. They went out there, they put on what I thought was two good shows. They gave the crowd a good show. Everybody seemed to be pretty happy coming out of it. And now it's on to Rochester, and we are now done with all the big shows, right? CM Punk coming back. United Center in Chicago, the first dance. Done. All Out. Done. Arthur Ashe. Done. I don't know what's next. Full Gear, I guess, as far as the next big show. At some point, all of these big shows and big debuts are going to stop. And that is when the real test begins for Tony Khan and AEW. Everybody's all excited right now. Oh my God, CM Punk and Bryan Danielson and Adam Cole and Ruby Soho and all this new talent being injected into the talent roster. And oh my God, they're going to be in the United Center in Chicago. That's an NBA building. And oh my God, they're going to be at Arthur Ashe Stadium, a tennis stadium, biggest crowd ever. What happens when all of that is over and AEW is just hitting their cities and now they have to take all these people that they brought in and fit the puzzle pieces where they belong and give us programs and storylines and feuds and matches that are going to keep us entertained every single week? That now becomes the challenge. That is where Tony Khan will have to show what kind of a booker he really is. And I'm looking forward to finding out because they have a tremendous talent roster. They have put together just an absolutely stacked roster of talent. And they're probably not done yet. At least according to Tony Khan, there's more people coming in the months to come. So they may not even be done. What they do with those people now is going to be very important. And it'll be fun to follow, you know, in the weeks ahead. Can they sustain all of this momentum and all of this goodwill that they've built up with their audience, which I think is one of the things really working in their favor? More often than not, AEW has done an exceptional job of giving the fans, their fans, what they want to see. They don't leave the fans feeling like they just got fucked or they just got screwed and shit on. And it's going to be very important for them to maintain that trust with their audience. Their audience has a lot of trust and loyalty in their product. You know, brand loyalty, product loyalty, that's not an easy thing. But they've been able to accomplish that. Now they have to try to maintain that. And we'll see if they can do it. Let's take a look at that Twitter poll. See what you guys thought of night two of the Grand Slam. And, well, even as late as it is, we have almost 1,000 votes in on Twitter. 86.6% thumbs up and 13.4% thumbs down. And that is the current Twitter poll results. We have the live poll in the chat. Another 680 votes in there. 91% thumbs up, 9% thumbs down. So get those votes in. And let your voice be heard. What did you think of the shows tonight? Going to find out also because I'm going to be reading your super chats here in just a second. And, you know, somebody in the chat just mentioned Owen Hart. That's another great example right there. You know, that's a very cool thing that AEW is doing. Despite all the trolls and all the haters and all the bullshit that I saw online this week. And I ranted on that the other night, and I'm going to probably do it again on Sunday when I talk about it on Sound Off 723. But it's a very cool thing for them to be doing, you know, the whole concept of an Owen Hart tournament and the Owen, as they're calling it. These are the types of things that AEW needs to continue to do to ingratiate themselves to their fan base. This is something that their fans think is really cool to see. Again, they've done a very good job of that so far. You wonder, how could AEW have come so far so fast, right? And they're still growing. But how could they come so far in the span of 2 years, farther than any other company in that span of time since the death of WCW has come? How did they do that? Well, they did it by, like I said, giving their fan base what they want to see and trying to come up with different concepts and, you know, other, you know, different ideas of cool things that they can do that their fan base is going to be really excited about and think is, hey, that's pretty cool. That's really cool to see them doing something like that. That's another example of that. Now, whether Kevin Owens decides to leave the company and when AEW is planning on doing the Owen Hart tournament, there could be an interesting connection there. You know, the biggest Owen Hart fan was Kevin Owens, hence his name. In fact, I think he named his son after Owen Hart. So if the timing were to work out, wouldn't that be cool for someone like him if he were to come over to AEW to be part of some kind of Owen Hart Memorial Tournament? It's possible. You know, if the timing works out, anything is possible. So, and for all of the new channel members that we picked up tonight, let me just remind you, if you are new, it might be a little late for this tonight, but maybe this weekend, check out that members-only Q&A. An hour of video answering your questions that I specifically put up for channel members in a post in the community tab here on this channel. We try to do more of these Q&As every few weeks, so we'll have another thread up very soon. You can submit questions. This is for all channel members, so you can go back and there's some more content for you this weekend. And a quick shout-out also to our friends over at Wrestle Rumble. I did mention Extreme Rules is coming up on Sunday. I am going to be live on YouTube, by the way, when that pay-per-view is over. And you can get in on the Extreme Rules Pick'em contest right now. First place winner gets $1,000 cash. Second place and third place get $100 each. You answer a series of prop questions to accumulate points. So you can go buy your entry right now. Get them in. Deadline is probably 8 p.m. right before the pay-per-view on Sunday. So you got a little bit of time. But go ahead and support WrestleRumble.com. Always coming up with fun ideas, and got some other ones coming up in the future. So get in on that contest. All right, let's go ahead and check out your Super Chats. How's everybody doing at 1:15 a.m. on a Saturday morning? Who needs sleep, right? I'll sleep when I'm dead. That's what I always say. Which, if I don't get enough sleep, is going to be happening sooner than I would like for it to. I have a birthday coming up in a few weeks. I got to be here for that. I can't kick the bucket just yet. It's a little too premature for that. But let's go back here and check out all of your suit. We got a whole bunch of them here. Always love to see that. Nayef Alsafar. Thank you for the $9.99 super chat. As always, showing love. Nayef is always here with us every week. DiLorenzo dropped a big bomb. I think he dropped a $100 bomb, which wasn't quite $100 after YouTube takes their cut, as you can see. But DiLorenzo, thank you very much, man. That was a very unexpected surprise earlier, before I even went live. Santiago says it is 10:20. It's 10:20. It is 10:20 in California, all you West Coast folks. It's 10:20 in the evening. Thank God Hobbs did not break his neck. Also, AEW really needs to just stop using insider terms on TV. It just comes across bad. Hope you're doing good. Thought I would be generous this week. I was very generous of you. So thank you. Ted Evans with the $20 bomb. Do you think the fact that USA paying $265 million a year, Fox paying $205 million a year, but TNT dishing out $45 million for a super hot product like AEW, has USA and Fox reconsidering their investment? I don't think they're reconsidering their investment. I have to think that they're, especially on the Fox side, and that was actually some reporting that came out today on Fightful Select from Sean Ross Sapp, that Fox has not been entirely enamored with WWE's performance so far. I think they had higher expectations, even though SmackDown on a lot of weeks does end up being number one or number two in the key demo. Yeah, if we're going to talk about key demo with AEW, you got to be fair about it and talk about it for WWE as well. So while they do well in that on most weeks, I think overall these numbers are probably not exactly what Fox was expecting when they gave them a $1 billion deal for 5 years. So there might be a little bit of buyer's remorse there, I think, on the part of Fox. So when we talk about the future for WWE and AEW, and, you know, can AEW ever catch up to WWE? You know, it's not going to be a very easy thing, but it all hinges on these TV contracts. If AEW can somehow, for another year and a half, sustain the kind of momentum that they have had, if they are perceived as being the hot in wrestling product right now, even if their numbers don't quite match WWE, everybody's talking about AEW, right? Let's just say. And these TV contracts come due. And USA or Fox see what's going on and they're like, their deal's coming up with Turner, with Warner, I guess, Warner Media. Maybe we should have a conversation with them. Maybe they pit the two sides against each other and all of a sudden you have a bidding war. It is not really that far-fetched to think that something like that could happen. All of a sudden, AEW goes from making $45 million a year to making triple or quadruple that, which I would expect them to make a lot more than that, even if they just stay right where they are. I mean, they're going to clean up nicely on their next TV deal when it comes up in the future. But their deals, they come up not really all that far apart. That's why I think you look ahead 12 to 18 months, the wrestling landscape is going to be very, very interesting to follow when it comes to those TV contracts. That's a long time into the future. A lot can happen between now and then. AEW can, you know, as soon as you go up, they could come right back down. But if the current product, if things look the way it looks now for AEW and they continue to grow a little bit, a little bit, a little bit, a little bit, and WWE just sort of stagnates, you could potentially have a bidding war when it comes to TV contracts, and all of a sudden things can change in a New York minute. That is going to be very interesting to see how that shakes out. DiLorenzo again dropping some love. Watching on Fight is a real bad time. Also, tapping Rampage hurts it more than it does help. Tapping? I don't quite know what you're referring to there, but thank you, DiLorenzo. Dry chicken without flavor. It is time for Private Party to once again enter the forbidden door. Impact, NWA, or even New Japan. They need their heel persona tweaked and enhanced. I think Private Party has really suffered more than they have thrived as part of this whole Hardy Family Office thing. I don't think it's helped their cause. The heel turn and just being part of that whole group, they're not nearly as hot as they were before they turned heel. So I actually don't think it's done them any favors, personally. But that's nothing that a babyface turn can't change very easily. Split away from the HFO, you go babyface again. Start marching your way towards the tag team titles. All of those ills can very easily be cured. Nir Rof dropping some love from Israel. Nir, good morning. It's morning. Well, it's morning here too, I guess, right? But it's a little later in the morning where he is. Dry Chicken, AEW Grand Slam. Both Dynamite and Rampage were fantastic. I would love to see them back in Queens, New York, or do a bigger venue in Manhattan or in Brooklyn. I would love to see, and I put this out there right now. I just put this out there into the atmosphere. Whoever is listening, whoever's going to hear this, I don't care if it's AEW. I don't care if it's WWE. I would love to see one of these promotions go back to the Manhattan Center, back to the Hammerstein Ballroom. I just think it is a great fucking venue for a wrestling show. I've been there so many times for so many Ring of Honor shows. Go back there for the Hammerstein. I know it's a terrible building to do television. It's like a small, dingy building. You don't have a lot of room there. It's like one working bathroom. Very small, you know, dressing room. It's not an ideal place to film television. I get that. But I think AEW would probably be more likely than WWE at this point to do, let's say, a week of Dynamite and Rampage from the Manhattan Center at the Hammerstein Ballroom. I just think it's a great atmosphere for a wrestling show. So I see AEW there before I see WWE. But I'd love for WWE to go back there. Ever since they had that one episode of ECW they taped, where the crowd completely shit all over Batista and Big Show. When you have an ECW show and you give the fans Batista against the Big Show, what do you think is going to happen? They got exactly the reaction that you could have predicted. And it scared them and they haven't been back since. I don't believe they've had a single show at that venue since that taping. But somebody should go back there because I think it's just a great fucking building to do wrestling in. So if you want to come to Manhattan, that is the place to go. Brooklyn, you've got Barclays. I don't know if they have some kind of exclusive agreement with WWE. You know, Survivor Series is going to be there in November. But AEW has proven they could fill the building. They got 19,000 people in a stadium in Queens. No reason they can't get 13 or 14,000 in the Barclays Center. You know, here in my backyard. Nick Grosso. Going on, Nick. Did you see Dark Side? Oh, that's right. Yes, thank you. Born Sinner reminded me. I completely forgot about Raw 25. Raw 25 was the first show since the Big Show Batista ECW match. They did go back there for the 25th anniversary. That's right. That was a disaster. They were cutting between locations. They had barely any matches from the Manhattan Center. Jim Ross, as they said, looked like Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler were falling asleep at their desk. That's right. But see, even that show, even though it turned out to be kind of a disaster of a night, I loved seeing Raw back at the Manhattan Center. It's just this intimate venue, so bring it on back. Let's go. Run it back. I don't care who does it. One of the two companies has got to do it. I know the rent isn't cheap. They could afford it. You got a couple of billionaires who run these companies. I think you can run 1 week at the Manhattan Center and you'll be all right. Tony Khan shelling out big bucks for all these theme songs for these guys. I think he can run a show at the Hammerstein Ballroom. But anyway, Nick says, did you see Dark Side of the Ring last night? Very sad story. I never saw that side of James Mitchell. Rampage was pretty good. Some things I wasn't crazy about, like the Dan Lambert stuff, but a good show. I did see Dark Side of the Ring, and I will be reviewing it on the channel at some point this weekend. So you can look for my review on the Chris Canyon episode. We got Boots. Boots! Dropping $2. Thank you, Boots. Putting the boots to everybody in the chat. Everybody say hello to Heavy Metal Thunder in the chat. Heavy Metal Thunder. Anti-M Bishop 07. Main event kind of dragged, but all in all, a great Rampage. Marked out for Homicide. And shout out to GCW for two great shows this week. All the best. Yeah, somebody's got to let me know who won that match tonight. We had Suzuki one-on-one with Homicide. I want to know who won that match. Level 20, dropping $5. I can vouch that the audience was hot for Rampage. Not sure why that did not translate on TV. Sounded like it was muffled. Dry Chicken Without Flavor, I spoke to Ghetto Son, and I told him my G1 Climax prediction. Zack Sabre Jr. against Okada in the finals. Zack Sabre Jr. goes over at the G1. I am booking it. Well, we know one person who will not be going over in the G1. In fact, he will be 0-9 in the G1 due to forfeit, and that is Tetsuya Naito, who injured his left knee. We do not yet know how long he will be out for, but he is definitely out of the G1. If this company didn't have bad luck, they wouldn't have any luck at all. This company has been completely snake-bitten all year long. Ace of Masta, Punk fears Hook. There's a lot of people in that company who fear Hook. Hook is the future. Michael Pavone, dropping $9.99. Hey, Salamazar, I've been listening to your show since my sophomore year of high school. Today is my 22nd birthday, and I won't be able to listen to tonight's show, but I still wanted to show my support. Michael, thank you, and happy birthday. Michael has turned 22 years old. He was a sophomore in high school, which means he would have been, 16? So he's been listening for about 5 years. That's very cool. Roach Killa, Chris Savage. Longtime listener, first time I've gotten to a live stream, just turned 33 10 minutes ago, and I'm going to start it off here on the Sound Off. Boy, we got a lot of people celebrating birthdays this weekend. We're all building up to the only birthday that really matters here in a few weeks. Yeah, it's funny, I didn't realize which day my birthday was on. My birthday's on a Wednesday this year. So I get to spend my birthday with all of you live after Dynamite on the 6th. So that's going to be fun. Jose Leanos, great show, but man, it sucks. Now, it reminds me, was it last year? I think it was last year. I forgot who it was. Wish I could shout him out again. But somebody had gotten me the cameo from Bret Hart, which I played here on the stream. That was a very nice birthday gift to get last year. One of those cameos. Jose Leano's great show, but man, it sucks. As a fan of Lance Archer, to see him keep losing. I know he was in the main event, but it is still hard to watch his booking. He has lost quite a bit in AEW. It feels like he's lost a lot more than he's won. Food Hive. CM Punk is ducking the fade from Hook. Quintus Brown with 5. I was at the show. I had a great time. This show was one of the best wrestling shows that I have ever attended. I heard that from quite a few people. It was very special to be there. Jacob, no message, just showing some support. $4.99 super chat. Born Sinner in the chat says, better gift, the Brett cameo or the Vince Russo cameo? Yeah, somebody got me a Vince Russo cameo, too. And, well, I think you know the answer to that one. You even need me to give you an answer? You can pretty much answer that yourself. Chris Quillman, other than Omega and Danielson, what was your favorite match from the two Grand Slam shows? Hard pick, but I really enjoyed the trios match tonight. That is a very good question. What would have been my second favorite match from either show? And I'm trying to remember. I might go with either Cody and Malakai because I'm a big fan of Malakai Black. From the entrance to... Yeah, well, he's had only a handful of matches so far in AEW, but I would say... boy, either that or maybe the Punk match. I mean, I said the Punk match I thought was very good. I wouldn't say it was a great match. But I don't know if I would put the Malakai match over that or not. I had fun. I had a lot of fun watching the Adam Cole and the Bucks match against Christian and Jurassic Express. Of those three, if I had to narrow it down to just one, boy, that's a tough one. You put me on the spot here. boy, I don't know. I might go with the Malakai match. Just like the fact that he won. I said they need to have the balls to put him over a second time, and they did, and I'm very happy about that. Jacob, again, thank you for that $4.99 drop. Food Hive, what do you expect for Andrade against Pac 2? Who wins? Oh, you know, I'm thinking that Andrade wins again. I'm thinking Andrade wins. The only question is, does he win clean? Or is he a disingenuous heel who says, I don't want to win my matches that way because Chavo interfered, but then this time maybe his assistant Jose interferes or Andrade gets his foot on the rope or something like that. That's the only question. How does he win? And is he being sincere when he says that he doesn't want to be the kind of person who has to take a shortcut to win his matches? Because he's a heel. Most heels would take a shortcut to win their matches. But I don't see him losing yet. Chris Quillman, other than Omega... Oh, I answered that already. I had just skipped over Food Hive, so I wanted to make sure I didn't miss him. Nick Grosso, the new women's title is going to be called the TBS Championship. That is the scuttlebutt. Yes, that is the rumor. That will be... it will have some kind of TBS branding. I don't know if it'll be called the TBS Championship, but that is the rumor. So we'll have a TNT title and we'll have a TBS title. Soon on the other channels, we're going to have a USA title and we're going to have a Fox title. Turtlehead 2. What happened to Turtlehead 1? I'll bet Turtlehead 2 murdered Turtlehead 1. After watching Cole's Twitch channel, I fully appreciate him as a wrestler. Adam Cole equals total prick. The Chugs, which is what he calls himself on his streams, equals the nicest guy in the world. If you ever watch or listen to Adam Cole do any kind of out-of-character interview, he comes across as just the nicest guy. Like, too nice to even be in the wrestling business. He is. He is a nice guy when he's in the ring. Like you said, he knows how to be a heel and turn it on. He does his job very well. Ryan Spies... Rio Mizunami, the winner of the women's tournament earlier this year, revealed yesterday that she is returning to the U.S. for more work in AEW, so that is something to look forward to. Quintus Brown brought my hog tickets earlier tonight. Well then, Quintus, you and I might be seeing each other in person then on November 12th. I'm looking forward to it. Tickets are on sale, by the way. HOG. Wrestling.net. If you are in the New York metro area, if you are going to be around, the show is at the NYC Arena in Queens on Friday night. That is a Rampage night, but I will not be streaming that night. I will be commentating. The first House of Glory show in almost 2 full years. They got a nice, they have a nice billboard advertising the Born Again event up in Times Square. Right in the middle of Times Square with Amazing Red on the poster. It's going to be big. Fried chicken without flavor. If AEW signs Paige Van Zandt, it would be a big deal. Not as big as it would have been a few years ago. Her star has faded a little bit. Dave Meltzer, Wrestling Observer Newsletter, dropping $4.99. Look at Dave. Dave is dropping by the stream tonight. Dave gets all his news from the Solid Monster. He doesn't want to tell people that, but he gets all of his news from... I shouldn't say that, because then people will blame me. They'll crap on me for... Boy, he's got a lot of people that don't like him. I don't want them coming after me, thinking I'm the one supplying him with all this... what they call fake news. Do you agree Omega versus Danielson is as big or bigger than Rock against Hogan? Or Undertaker against Shawn Michaels? Undertaker against Shawn Michaels. Also, which company would you rather work for as a performer? I do not agree. Kenny Omega and Bryan Danielson was a fantastic professional wrestling match. And I look forward to seeing it again at some point in the future. But you're asking me, is it a bigger match than Hogan Rock and Undertaker Shawn Michaels from WrestleMania? No. No, it is not. For some people, it might be. But not for this guy. Which company would I rather work for as a performer? If I were a wrestler? Right now, I would say AEW. If I'm interested in more creative freedom and being able to, you know, book my own shots on the independent scene and work outside of AEW as well, AEW. Because I know in WWE, I wouldn't be allowed to do that. If I was okay with that and it was, you know, they offered me a bunch of money, I would be more open to WWE, I guess. But if I were a wrestler right now, I would think AEW would be the more appealing place for me to go. It's kind of what Mick Foley was talking about in that video he put up on Facebook a few weeks ago, that WWE is running the risk of, if it's not already happening, of becoming a company where a lot of these young talents are going to want to go to the other brand. They're not going to want to go to WWE. They're going to want to go somewhere else where they perceive that they will have more opportunities and more freedoms that they might not be afforded working for WWE. And I think there was a lot of truth and a lot of validity to what Mick Foley was saying. The only question is, are the people who need to hear it in the ivory tower over there in Stamford, are they listening and are they paying attention? Do they care? I don't know if they do. Mario DeRose, buy or sell Daryl Strawberry or Mike Piazza? Who is the better Met? I was a Strawberry guy growing up. So I have a lot of love for Daryl Strawberry as a Met. But Mike Piazza, I mean, especially that home run in that game after 9/11. I mean, you talk about iconic moments. Boy, you know, it's hard to vote against him. Probably Piazza. Chris Ludek, if no one from the inner circle will help Hager and Jericho against American top team, Hager should bring in Brazilian top team for backup. I've trained with both schools, and it was incredible. I don't think we need MMA overload, though. I mean, are fans of AEW going to care if they start bringing in Brazilian top team? I don't know that people are really going to want to see that. Level 20. Facto 2. My thinking about the tag team titles is that I think FTR will beat the Lucha Bros for the belts, and then Proud and Powerful would win the belts off of FTR. That's an interesting observation. I would be sad, though, if we don't get a Lucha Bros Santana Ortiz match at some point, though. But for them to revisit FTR and Santana and Ortiz, I don't have any issue with them putting the belts back on FTR. I wouldn't phase down FTR and say, oh, well, that's the end of their push. Because they're a lot more talented, I think, than a lot of people give them credit for. And they know how to go out there and have great matches. So if you want to get the belts on a a set of heels so that Santana and Ortiz can win the belts from heels and not do babyface against babyface. I think that's a fine idea. Tuxedo T Servo. Fun show, but I really, really hope Rampage does not go to 2 hours. I am too old for this late night stuff every week. Yes, you and I are on the same wavelength. Maybe I'm, maybe my olden age here. I'm getting a little too old for this late night shit. I'm like the oldest young guy that you will ever find. Should be in bed by 9 o'clock every night. You know, gonna get a rocking chair for the terrace that I have. You know, sit outside and people watch as they walk by. And start having dinner at 4:30 in the afternoon, and that's gonna be me. Paul Heyman. Can you see the next big signing for AEW being Asher Hale? Remind me again of what name Asher Hale went by on the indies before he went to NXT. Because I know he was among the recent releases. Honestly, that is such a fucking generic name. I cannot at this moment picture who it was. I'm trying to think, who was Asher Hale? I can't even... They released so many people with generic-sounding names that they gave them. I don't even remember exactly who he was. That wasn't Anthony Henry, was it? Remind me of who he was. Hugh Jazz. Would anything besides Hangman beating Omega at Full Gear be AEW's version of Starrcade 97? And also, should CM Punk turn heel... And Paige Van Zandt is mommy. CM Punk will eventually turn heel. He should not turn heel right now. Would there be any outcome that would be their Starrcade 97 moment? I assume you mean botching what should be a slam dunk. Yes, it would be giving the championship, I think, to anybody except Hangman Page. Now, if it doesn't happen at Full Gear, then... I mean, that's fine. I could see them wanting to extend it out to Revolution or even Double or Nothing. I think Double or Nothing would be too long. But, you know, one thing that AEW has been doing is they have these stories, long-term stories in some cases, and they allow them to play out. You just don't want it to play out too long, where you wait too long. And then when you finally get the payoff, it doesn't get the reaction because you missed it. You know, you missed your window for it. That's my only fear. They have demonstrated so far that they are pretty good, I think, at picking up on stuff like that. I don't think they're going to drop the ball with this one. I think they know that. I think they know what the destination should be. And really, the only question is, when do they do it? What pay-per-view do they do it and have the title change? Is it November? Is it February? Or is it May? The one thing about waiting until Double or Nothing... If they can get back to Vegas for that show, and I think that's their plan, is to try to get back to Las Vegas like they were for the first event. And I was at that first show in Vegas, and I had a fucking blast. And I forgot who it was, but somebody had floated this idea, and I really liked the idea. Which is that if you're not going to give Hangman the championship at Full Gear, what you can do is you can do the rematch with Omega and Bryan Danielson. And Omega will win, and he will retain the championship. Hangman, though, returns around that time. We now go into the beginning of next year. And what you do is you build to two big main event matches at Revolution in February. You can headline with two big matches at that pay-per-view. Kenny Omega defending the AEW World Championship against CM Punk. And Hangman Page going one-on-one with Bryan Danielson. With the idea being that Hangman gets a big win over Danielson. Danielson basically shakes his hand and endorses him when the match is over. He gives him the rub and says, "You're the better man. Good luck. Go get it. Go win that championship." Omega beats Punk. Maybe the Punk heel turn comes after that. And then Omega goes to Double or Nothing, and that's where Hangman wins the championship. So before he gets there, Hangman gets a win over Danielson en route to becoming the champion. If Punk loses to Omega and then comes the heel turn, maybe they you know, it's a slow burn heel turn. Once Hangman wins the title, Punk can be one of those you know, first couple of heels that he steps into the ring with and defends his championship against. You could have heel Punk against Hangman Page as the AEW champion. So there's a lot of different ways that you could go with this. I don't see Bryan Danielson holding the AEW title in these next couple of years. This is part of what I talked about in the members-only Q&A video earlier in the week. I do see CM Punk holding that title, but I don't see Danielson. I see this next chain of champions as, and this is not the order I gave, I don't think, but basically Hangman's going to hold it, Punk is going to hold it, Adam Cole even might hold it before Danielson does, because I don't think he has to, you know? But I'm not against that idea. I could see them wanting to give Hangman a big win over one of those big names as almost like a passing of the torch in a way, you know, even though he doesn't need it. He could win the championship in a few months without that. But if they want to drag the story out, he's got to beat somebody in the meantime. Who better than Punk or Danielson? And you just hope the AEW fans are loyal enough to Hangman that if he beats them, they don't boo him. You know, that they don't love Punk and Danielson so much that when Hangman wins, it's almost like disappointing. That would be the absolute worst reaction that you could possibly get. So, I don't know if you want to really play around with that. Nier says, Israelis and Palestinians want peace. Then why hasn't it happened by now? It's been so many years. We got to get more people like Nier. See, if we had more people like him, this whole thing would have been squashed years ago. I like that attitude. That's a good attitude to have. Quintus Brown, what do you think is next for Malakai Black? I would like to see Black feud with Darby next. I think that would be a great feud. I think Malakai and Darby, and you've got Sting in the shadows there. Maybe something with Sting and Malakai Black. I like it. Domination Warrior, Misu equals King. Brian rules, and I still had peas before. I don't know what you just said, but Domination Warrior, thank you for the $2. Can someone translate that for me? Misu equals King. Brian rules, and I still had peas before. I feel like this is some kind of like Morse code of some kind. Maybe he's in distress. Maybe he's being held captive. He's trying to send some kind of a message to us. I'm not sure. Russell with the $10. Love you, Solo Monster. Keep up the great streams. Assuming we don't get Hangman at full gear, would love to see Danielson work singles matches against the rest of the Elite to earn his match with Omega. Well, it would give them some big matches on TV if they did that. One of the better TV matches that AEW has ever done was Nick Jackson against Rey Fénix. So the Bucks can go, especially Nick, in singles matches. You could do Bryan Danielson against each Buck. You could do Danielson against Cole. And like you said, eventually get to the rematch with him against Omega. Omega already went on social media and said there will be no rematch. So maybe they make him work for it, and then at full gear, he gets the title match. Paul Heyman. If Bray Wyatt came to AEW, what if they put him together with Sister Abaddon? If Paul Heyman came over to AEW, I think he could do better than Abaddon. Zaki Ute. I haven't watched wrestling in years. Should I give AEW a watch? Yes. Yes, you should. I know a few lapsed fans, in fact, who have come back and who are enjoying what they are seeing at AEW. You may watch AEW and be appalled by all of the dives and the super kicks and stuff like that, or Orange Cassidy. You might not get it, but I would definitely, if you've never seen it before, I would certainly give it a watch. I would give everything a watch. Give WWE a watch. It's not really all that different than it was a few years ago, but you might enjoy what you see. You might enjoy Braun Breaker, Rex Steiner, as he should be called, in NXT 2.0. Or Tony D'Angelo, who's coming to the WWE. He's Italian. He's coming to NXT. He's a made man, you see. He's gonna come to NXT. He's gonna be breaking balls. You might enjoy it. Richard Slater, Solid Monster rules. AEW rules. WWE sucks. And Richard says AEW has made me a fan again. So Richard is very happy with the AEW product. So again, perhaps Zaki Ute might be as well if he gives them a shot. It is almost 2 o'clock in the morning here, and we have still right around 700 people, which is very cool. And we picked up about 7 or 8 new channel members, which that makes my night. You guys have made me a very happy guy. I was very stressed out before. I have a lot of work left to do for the show this weekend. Working hard for you guys, as I do every week. Trying to put everything together here. And I only first got to watch Dark Side of the Ring earlier, so I have to just jot down my thoughts before I forget everything. But we'll work on that this weekend. And seeing all these new channel members warms my heart. Hey, Sergio, have a good night, man. Samoan Fan 101, to continue my previous joke, if you have a bad case of the herpes bug, get yourself a box of Icaminjira. Side effects include watching Raw. Well, that's certainly a joke. I don't know that it was a good one, but there it is. I wish I had my Badum Tiss sound effect. I would play it right now. EJ. EJ Slemp. When Wardlow turns on MJF, when he turns him on, is this some of this late night content that we get here on the stream? When Wardlow turns on MJF, do the Pinnacle get involved? The rest of the group have stayed separate from those two for a few weeks, and I don't know why. Same thing with the Inner Circle. They're not broken up, but they're all kind of off doing their own thing, and nobody came out to save Jericho and Hager, so it's kind of like the same thing is happening in effect with the Pinnacle. I don't think they get involved. I think whenever it happens, I think it's strictly an MJF and Wardlow thing. Samoan Fan again, MJF should throw a Z-Pack at CM Punk in a segment. Stephen Chappa dropped $20 earlier. That's the Jeff Hardy, the creepy Jeff Hardy super chat. Thank you, Stephen. Stephen dropped a lot more money on the Dynamite stream the other night, so he's really been contributing this week. I appreciate that. JN Sermons, is Brian still doing the concussion protocols? I don't know. You'd have to ask him. I don't believe he talked about any of that. All the interviews that he did, I didn't hear him bring it up once. I'm not even sure what the concussion protocols are in AEW relative to WWE. I know WWE does the impact testing. I don't know if AEW has publicly outlined what their policy is on concussion protocol. Turtlehead, Pac for FTW champion. What say you? I think that would be fine. More Pac. We need more Pac on TV. EJ, a few weeks ago, there was a thread in the Facebook group asking all of us who the WWE champion on the day they were born was. Mine was Sid. Who was yours? Mine was Bob Backlund. Bob Backlund was the WWF champion when I was born. Rob Reed with the $7 super chat. Still can't believe, I think that's the peanut butter Vader time. Some of these super chat values are all, they're all defined, for those who don't know, in the description down below. So if there's a certain one that you want to trigger on screen, you can find them. They're always listed down below in the description. Still can't believe WWE were actually planning on changing Adam Cole's name, according to what he told Jericho. Yeah, and again, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, because I just want to say something here. You know, when Fightful had a report a couple weeks ago, talking about the whole story, which, you know, Ringside News was the first to report it, and eventually Meltzer backed them up on that. And he added a little more to the report. And then Adam Cole did an interview where he was asked about that. And he said, That's the first I'm hearing of it. Nobody had ever told me about those plans for me to become a heel manager for Keith Lee. Nobody ever told him that. And somehow this turned into, oh, Meltzer is wrong again. It's fake news. See, it never happened. And I said, you know, at no point in any of this did they say that, no, that's a fake idea, that's a fake report, or that never happened. He simply said it could have been an idea that was pitched. Nobody told me about it. And Sean Ross Sapp, even on Twitter, I remember he said, you know, he had said something, and then, not that he backtracked, but then he kind of followed up on it and said, even though it's not an idea that Adam Cole was ever aware of, nobody told him about it, it is important to note that a lot of the talent, a lot of the time, is not told about a lot of the ideas that get pitched. Some of them will find out, some of them will be pitched directly, but a lot of ideas get thrown out there that never make it to the talent. Maybe it never even makes it to TV. So again, to kind of put a bow on that once and for all, there was never any report refuting the story that Adam Cole was going to be a manager for a heel Keith Lee. So we can squash that right now. Nobody, including Adam Cole, ever said that that was false. He just said that he was never made aware of it. There was also, Meltzer also in his report mentioned that the belief is that they might have wanted to change Adam Cole's name. And now we find out from Adam Cole that that, in fact, was something that they were thinking about doing, which is something Meltzer reported. So I ask all the people out there whose first knee-jerk reaction whenever Dave Meltzer, not that Dave Meltzer is infallible and he's always 100% correct, he's not. But all the people whose knee-jerk reaction is immediately to go, oh, Meltzer reported it, so therefore it's fake. It's not real. It didn't happen. I hope those same people have all that energy that they used to go on social media and say, oh, see, it was a fake report because Adam Cole said he never heard of the idea. Well, Adam Cole did talk about the fact that they wanted to possibly change his name, which is something Dave mentioned in the newsletter. I don't see people saying, oh boy, you know, Dave Meltzer was right about that. I don't hear anybody sticking up for Dave Meltzer on that. It's funny how they kind of cherry pick certain things. If you're going to call the guy out for being wrong, in your mind, being wrong on one thing, then why not give him credit for being right about something else? It's all nonsense. The way people react to these things and they get, you know, the things they say, the dumb shit that they say, I find it incredibly laughable. So I guess Meltzer is wrong only when they want him to be wrong. When he's right, he's also wrong. I guess that's pretty much the way it is. So do I believe that there was an idea presented to have Adam Cole as a manager for a heel Keith Lee? Yes. Do I believe they wanted to possibly change his name so they don't have two Coles on the roster? Absolutely, because they've done that before. Yes, I do believe that. Based on their track record, yes, I believe that. And yes, it would have been a fucking stupid idea to have a guy with an established identity in your television show for 4 years. Forget the stuff on the indies and Ring of Honor. He was Adam Cole on USA Network for half the time he spent in NXT, right? Half the time they moved to USA. And you're going to bring him up to the main roster and change his name, possibly because he shares a last name with your play-by-play announcer on SmackDown? Then put him on Raw. Problem solved. It's a stupid fucking idea from the same company that calls, you know, Rick Steiner's son, Bron Breakker. I understand Bron is short for Bronson, which is his real first name. Bron Breakker. It's a terrible fucking name. And it should immediately be changed. No cap. Sent a $4.99 super chat. Solomonster, do you get tired of the mark wars that AEW fans wanting WWE to go out of business and WWE fans wanting AEW to go out of business? Yes, I'm tired of both fan bases, and I wish the earth would open up and swallow them whole, and we would never have to see them or hear from them again, because it has gotten toxic. I mean, it's always been toxic to a degree, but it has gotten incredibly toxic in recent months. to the point where it's almost embarrassing, frankly, to be a wrestling fan. They have made it so that it is embarrassing to be a fan of professional wrestling, to even be associated with that fan base and lumped in with people like that is embarrassing. You know, it was a great scene in one of the episodes from the first season of The Shield, one of my favorite TV shows of all time, where there are two, I think they were drug dealers, but Vic Mackey, Michael Chiklis, the main cop on the show, these two are at war with each other, right? So he locks them in a shipping container. He points a gun at them. They're like, "What are you doing?" He goes, "Get in there." And he locks them in a shipping container. And they're like, "Mackey, what are you doing?" He goes, "You guys are going to settle your differences. And one of you is going to come out the next morning." And he locks them in there, pitch black. He comes back the next day. I don't think he was expecting, you know, only one person to actually come out. But he opens the lock. One of them walks out covered in blood. The other one never walks out. He locked them in there so they could basically fucking kill each other. I kind of wish we could do that with these extreme fans on the AEW side and these extreme nitwits on the WWE side. I wish we could lock them in a shipping container and just let them destroy each other. That would be fantastic. May the best man win. Let them both beat each other to a bloody pulp. Quintus Brown. Green in the chat. Green says, "Meh, The Shield was okay." Oh, that's worth a block right there. I'm going to have to block you from the channel for that. I'm sorry. we can't have any disparaging Shield comments here in my chat. I will not allow them. It's one of the greatest television shows ever made. I question your judgment on that. Quintus Brown, if you can pick four AEW stars to be a part of next year's G1, besides Bryan, who would you pick? I kind of want Kenny Omega back in the G1, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, get some of that New Japan Kenny Omega back. Kenny Omega, I feel like Pac in the G1 would rip it up. I really do. Omega, Pac, Bryan, of course. And you said four, not including Bryan, right? You said four. Boy, I mean, there's a lot of options on that roster. I mean, you could say Punk. How would Punk do in the G1? He's hinted in the past about being interested maybe one year in doing that. I think someone like him, I think Andrade in the G1. Andrade used to be IWGP Intercontinental Champion, so it's not like he doesn't have a history there. Is that four? I don't know if that's three or four. Phoenix, Turtlehead says Phoenix. Yeah, Phoenix could be another one, but I like those names I just gave you, I think. Those are the ones that I think they would thrive and do well. It'd be fun to watch them in the G1. That's right, Santiago says Pac and Ishii. I'm telling you, Pac would kill it in the G1. I really think he would kill it. He would kill someone. Pac and Ibushi. Imagine Pac and Kota Ibushi one-on-one in the G1. See, now I'm getting my hopes up. We have to move on here. Ricky Edmund, Keith Lee should be AEW. You know what? Before all is said and done, he might be. HBK, by the way, you're incorrect. That's Keith Bearcat Lee. You got to get it right. Keith Bearcat Lee. HBK C83, how would beer money fit into AEW today? Well, I mean, beer money at their current age or beer money from 10 or 12 years ago? I think beer money would have done very well in AEW. Natural Scream Thriller, dropping 10 bucks. Being at AEW Grand Slam for Dynamite and Rampage, it felt bigger live experience than any WWE live experience besides MSG events. Here's hoping in the future that AEW comes to MSG. I think it is inevitable at some point, although I think they want to make Arthur Ashe their home. I feel like they want that to be kind of their home base in New York. But if they have a chance to run Madison Square Garden at some point, at least one time, just for the prestige of it, I think it's a guarantee they'll run MSG at some point. Quintus Brown, MJF should be the new AEW champion after Hangman. I think somebody listened to my members-only Q&A video the other day. Jason Case, what was the worst wrestling event you ever attended live, and what made you want to attend it in the first place? Was it Fatal 4-Way in 2010? I think you stole the words right out of my mouth. I went to the one and only Fatal 4-Way pay-per-view that WWE ever did. And I don't remember that being a very good show at all. So, I mean, look, I've probably been to some Raws that were kind of dull. I've been to WrestleManias that were kind of dull, to be honest with you. It might be Fatal 4-Way. I always had fun at Ring of Honor. I mean, there could be Ring of Honor shows that were just way too fucking long. But I always had fun at Ring of Honor shows back in the day. King of Doug style, do Punk and Brian, or do Punk or Brian, need to win the AEW title to consider their choice to go to AEW the right one? Absolutely not. They did not sign with AEW to win the championship. It might happen. I don't think either one of them are marks for the belt. That's not why they went to the company. If they feel like they have something that they can contribute, and in the case of Brian, he really wants to work with all the young guys on that roster. He's just happy to be there. He had this big smile on his face the other day at Arthur Ashe. It wasn't even a title match. So Brian doesn't give a shit about any of that. And frankly, I don't think Punk does either. Although Punk, I think, will be champion at some point. But to answer your question, no. Whether or not they win the title is not going to dictate whether or not their choice was the right one to make. I think if you were to ask both of them, I mean, it's still early, but if you were to ask both of them, I think that they would already tell you it was the correct choice to make. Zachy Ute, I'm going to give it a shot, especially since I was enjoying Aleister Black's run in NXT before I stopped watching. We'll give it a shot, and then write back and let us know what you think of AEW. Jason Case, which fans were worse, in your opinion, the AEW stands of today or the TNA stands from years ago? Any stands are terrible. The ones, you know what I mean when I'm talking about stands. I'm talking about the ones that kind of make you cringe. I don't care what fan base it is. WWE, AEW, TNA. They're all embarrassing. Of the two, though, the TNA ones were really bad. Was it the TNA soldiers or whatever? Like, I was at war with them. They were at war with me. I couldn't give two shits. I used to make fun of them on my show all the time. One of them was, like, the general who was, like, locked in a fucking bunker somewhere. He had, like, a beret on his head. He just reminded me of that. Those were pretty bad. I would say those were probably the worst. But in a weird way, I kind of have respect for them because they were so dedicated. And just the slightest little dig at Impact would just set them off in the worst way. They really believed. They were true believers in that product at that time. They were like, they would go down with the ship if they had to. They were loyal until the very end. I have a certain respect for people like that. Joey in the chat says there are some anime stan that are bad. Is that true? Are there anime stans? You know what? The only stans who I think are acceptable are Solomonster stans. Those are the only ones I can accept. EJ, I have a WWE in 2001 question. If WCW does not die until the fall of 01 or even 2002, how different is WrestleMania 17 and the rest of 2001 in terms of WWE television? I think it is probably not all that different at all, because if you think about it, I mean, the sale was so late in the month of March that all they did was fly in the WCW guys and put them up in a skybox. They really were not part of the WrestleMania 17 plans. So I don't think it affects WrestleMania 17, but obviously it affects the rest of their programming because they built a whole invasion angle around it. So yeah, it would have impacted the remainder of the year or the following year, but WrestleMania 17, I think, would have been just fine. Ace Bobcat just became a Sound Off Superstar tier member, so Ace, welcome to the club. Always got to shout out my new channel members here. Paul Heyman, you think Jack Swagger should win the TNT belt from Miro? Absolutely not. There it is. There's the notification there, that little Bret Hart animation from WrestleMania the arcade game. Thank you again, Ace of Bobcat, for becoming a member. And finally, we have the final super chat here at 2:12 a.m. Marcus the Entertainer. Why doesn't AEW do a lot of three-way or four-way matches? I like the fact that we don't get a lot of them. I think it's okay to do them every now and then, but it's like kind of, disqualifications and a lot of the stuff that we're so used to seeing all the time on WWE television. They kind of lean on it as a crutch. Maybe it's just the fact that AEW hasn't been around as long. Give them a few years. Maybe we'll have triple threat matches out the wazoo. The one thing they do a lot of are trios matches, which is why I think they should just introduce trios belts at this point, because it's kind of ridiculous that they don't have them. But I think it's not something that they really want to do. I think they have more of a focus on the tags and the trios because they have so many people. But I don't think they want to go overboard on some of the gimmick matches that you just mentioned, which I respect, because we already have enough triple threats and fatal four ways. I kind of like the fact that we really don't get very many of them at all in AEW. When we finally do get one, maybe it's Omega, Punk, and Danielson or something, it'll feel really big. It'll feel, really special when they do it. And Marcus the Entertainer again, unleash Hook upon AEW. It is only a matter of time, brother, before we find out what Hook brings to the table in the ring. We still have yet to see him wrestle a single match, and yet he strikes fear into the hearts of everybody on the AEW roster. Dr. NXT Scorpio, would Bron Breakker be more over with the fans if he included math in his promos? Of course. I think in due time he will be doing math in his promos. He just debuted. Gotta give him time. Thunder Knight, who did not drop a super chat. I thought it was a super chat at first, but he is a channel member for 2 months. So shout out to him. He's been a Sound Off superstar for 2 months. Is there anyone from Impact you would like to see go to AEW? I would really like to see Deonna Purrazzo go. I think Deonna Purrazzo would be a fine addition, I think, to the women's division. Moose, I think, is somebody who could be doing bigger things than he is doing at the moment. I know Josh Alexander has a lot of hype behind him. I haven't seen as much of his work as I probably should have, but what I have seen of him is impressive, and frankly, I think there's a very good chance he takes the Impact title from Christian at Bound for Glory. So I think everybody I just mentioned there would be a fine fit in AEW, but they're not needed. AEW's roster as it is very stacked. They do not need an influx of talent from Impact. If I had to pluck just one person, though, I think that they could probably do well with Purrazzo just because the women's division is not as stacked as the men's division. So anyone like that from the women's division that you could bring in, I think would only be helpful to them. Marcus the Entertainer, Team Taz for Trios Champions. I still say it'll be Jurassic Express, although I really don't want to see Marco stunt with a belt necessarily, but you've got them, you've got the Super Click. I don't know if Death Triangle is even a thing anymore. You have a lot of options when it comes to trios belts in this company. But we are all caught up now. Wow, there you go. You guys came out strong tonight. We are all caught up on your super chats. Let me check the poll on Twitter one last time here, see where we're at. We have broken 1,000 votes in so far. And we've got 86 up, 14% thumbs down. So thank you to everybody who has chimed in. At Solomonster is my handle on Twitter. And we do something at the end of all of these AEW streams called Be the Booker, where I will randomly book a WrestleMania main event match, And we're going to put my booking skills to the test here and see what kind of match we can come up with for a Mania main event. We had a very interesting one on the Dynamite stream the other night. I booked Kevin Nash against Shinsuke Nakamura, which is not a match I have ever thought about before. I was very intrigued by that match. We might have to start booking these things out, trying to figure out how these matches would actually go. But let's see. What can we come up with here tonight? What can we come up with here tonight? Let us see. Oh, boy. We've got Braun Breaker 1.0 here. Mojo Rawley is going to be in the WrestleMania main event. And it will be Mojo Rawley going one-on-one with Sting. Mojo Rawley and Sting in the main event of WrestleMania. Do you know what that is, ladies and gentlemen? That is a fail. That is what that is. Sting against Mojo Rawley is not a WrestleMania main event. So unfortunately, tonight was an epic fail. But they can't all be winners. Unfortunately, tonight was just one of those nights. Although, Sting in the WrestleMania main event, obviously we could all buy that, right? Especially Sting in his prime, but boy, I don't know where the hell that match came from. Yikes. Well, hate to end it on that note, but anyway, I'm going to be back with you on Sunday night for Extreme Rules, which is mostly, if you look up and down the card, it's mostly normal rules this year, with one Extreme Rules main event. And Dr. NXT Scorpio says, -5 stars. Sorry, Sting. Yeah, that ain't going to cut it. I don't care if you have a 2-night WrestleMania or a 7-night WrestleMania. That ain't going to cut it as a main event of WrestleMania. But come on back here to the channel, because I'm going to be live on Sunday night for Extreme Rules. We'll do the big review and wrap up at the very end. I am going to have a Dark Side of the Ring review on the Chris Canyon episode coming up in the next few days. Extreme Rules predictions, I will have them on episode 723 of The Sound Off on Sunday. We're going to be covering a lot of stuff on that show. We'll talk about Extreme Rules. We'll talk about AEW. We'll talk about Raw from Monday, NXT 2.0. A little bit of this, a little bit of that. Got a lot of stuff lined up for you. So, EJ Slemp says, I would rather see Sting against Gronk. I don't think we need to see either one of those matches. It's late. I'm going to let you guys go. I want to thank you for all the Super Chat love tonight. You guys knocked it out of the park. We picked up a whole bunch of new channel members. And again, remember, all you Legends tier members, that's the $9.99 tier. I am going to be getting up more retro audio Sound Off episode 12 from 2008. Again, there's a whole bunch of Sound-Offs up until like episode 83 or 84 that are not available anywhere on the internet. And so slowly those are going up now. They have not been heard in years. I don't even like going back and listening to my voice that far back. I almost sound like a totally different person. But you guys get to hear it in all your glory if you are on the Legends tier. So there'll be more of that going up, and hopefully more Q&As in the very near future as well. So until then, be well. Stay safe. Yes, Johnny in the chat, I am still live, but not for much longer. We are about to get out of here. I will see you guys on Sunday night. Come on back and join me for the Extreme Rules stream. So until then, be well, stay safe, and have yourselves a fantastic night. Thank you for all of your support during the Grand Slam shows this week. I love each and every one of you. All right, I'm out of here. Take care, guys.